As a way of introduction, I just want to reiterate what we all know, that as classical Christian schools, Jesus Christ is at the center of all that we do. And I know at Whitfield, as most likely in your own schools, every day in every class we open up the Bible to understand who Jesus is and what he asks of us. So as we begin with that format, then let's talk about the Progymnasmata. And my purpose here this morning, this afternoon, for those of you who are not currently using the Progymnasmata, these exercises, composition exercises, as your curriculum, I hope that when you leave here, I will have convinced you that you need to take a very serious look at using this curriculum as your school's curriculum. So I've bitten off quite a bit here, and it's a fairly daunting task, but I think it's an important task. And so that's my purpose this afternoon, is to get you to seriously consider the Progymnasmata as your composition curriculum. It happened that a dog got a piece of meat and was carrying it home in his mouth to eat it in peace. Now on his way home, he had to cross a plank lying across a running brook. As he crossed, he looked down and saw his own shadow reflected in the water beneath. Thinking that it was another dog with another piece of meat, he made up his mind to have that also. So he made a snap at the shadow in the water, but as he opened his mouth, the piece of meat fell out, dropped into the water, and was never seen again. Beware lest you lose the substance by grasping at the shadow. The West had a wonderful composition curriculum for almost two millennia. For 2,000 years, we had an extremely effective composition curriculum. This composition curriculum would correspond to the meat in Aesop's fable. Western culture believed sometime after the Renaissance that it saw a better way to teach composition. And so it gave up the Progymnasmata and adopted a new curriculum. We grasped at a shadow and we lost our substance. For classical schools, the mark of an educated person was always the ability to write and speak well. We identify ourselves as classical Christian schools, and so our mark might be described as graduating individuals with the ability to write and to speak well about God and His creation, the good, the true, and the beautiful. We recognize that a successful composition, whether it be written or oral, is the successful application of the trivium. In a successful composition, the grammar is correct, the ideas are logical and clear, and the expression is engaging and pleasing. Such application marks a classically educated individual. Now, I realize I just now set myself up with a big bullseye, because if my grammar is not correct, or my ideas are not clear, or if I am not pleasing in my expression, then you'll know that I have not successfully done a good composition. But nonetheless, as we were just told by Dr. Grant, if something is worth doing, do it. So here we go. Good writers, then, are good thinkers. They're good thinkers both logically and rhetorically. The Progymnasmata begins to develop both logical and rhetorical structures in the mind. Good writing, as well as good speaking, is logically correct and a pleasure to encounter. Our minds and our imaginations are uplifted by a well-communicated encounter with truth. Such an experience lies at the heart of excellent communication. We rejoice in this type of quality and have taken on as our task at a classical Christian school, the goal to ensure that every graduate is a good writer. Every single one. In the last year, I've spoken with 3 academic professionals. All 3 were Christian. One was the president of a Christian university. The second was the dean of an honors program. And the third was the English department head of a university as well. All 3 mentioned that the greatest weakness of incoming freshmen was the inability to write. These are 3 professors who deal primarily with Christian students. Students who are coming from the homeschool movement, who are coming from Christian schools, as well as the government schools. The second weakness that they mentioned, and it's related to the first, was the inability to reason. And I believe that as we get into this and we understand it better, we'll find that one of the reasons that our graduates not only don't write well but may not think as well is because of a poor composition curriculum. That too trains not only in how to write but in how to think as well. Unfortunately, our culture is producing graduates who don't write well. Even our Christian schools continue to produce graduates who don't write well. And unfortunately, we fail not just in one area of the trivium, but oftentimes in all 3. We simply turn to the editorial page of virtually any newspaper on any given day to see the results of our current composition methods. Faulty grammar displays our ignorance of the basic rules on which we must have agreement in order to effectively communicate with one another. Logical fallacies, both formal and informal, pepper our essays, testifying to our inability to think through a problem in such a way as to bring us to any kind of truth. The absence of any pleasing style or elegance ensures that even if we possessed truth, we will persuade no one that we have something important to say about how we should live our lives. Of course, excellent composition does not come out of thin air. Even as it takes a master craftsman years to learn his craft in order to produce excellence, so the making of an excellent communicator takes time. Like all crafts, basic skills must be learned. Intermediate and finally advanced skills must be taught progressively, with constant review and use of previously learned skills. This process takes time. Bonner, in his book, Education in Ancient Rome, mentions that children were sent to formal school at about age 10 or 12. These youngsters already knew how to read and write, and now they were being prepared to be trained in the schools of rhetoric. They would typically finish their training in the rhetoric school sometime between age 14, 16, 18, sometimes as old as 20. The trivium applied to language, which is what we're talking about when we discuss communication and composition, Latin in the past, English today, in fact, takes a full 10 or 12 years to teach. The progymnasmata, as a part of this process, develops writers who are good thinkers both logically and rhetorically. Because, once again, good composition is driven by both the intellect and the imagination. The progymnasmata begins to develop these logical and rhetorical structures in the mind that are so necessary to engage both the intellect and the imagination. That's the task before us, is to train students that are able to think and communicate in that way. C.S. Lewis once said that the intellect was the organ of understanding, the imagination is the organ of belief. And that's a very true statement. The progymnasmata, and let me briefly, very briefly, define for you what that is. On the back of your handout that had the, I believe it had the internet resources, there should be a list of the 14 stages of the progymnasmata. Does everybody see that? So that list begins with fable and then goes to narrative and it ends with law. Those are the 14 stages of the curriculum. And students work through those 14 stages, beginning in about the fourth or the fifth grade, up until they begin the rhetoric stage, which at Whitfield would be through the end of the ninth grade. So from at Whitfield, we go from the fourth grade through the ninth grade, we teach this progymnasmata curriculum. And in this curriculum, those 14 stages, each of those stages teach specific logical and rhetorical skills. The methodology of the progymnasmata is based on imitation. And that's the basic way in which we teach all of these skills is on imitation. So let's go into more detail about the tool, about the progymnasmata, and I'll begin with history. Once again, referring back to Bonner in his book, Education in Ancient Rome, he's traced the progymnasmata back to about 100 BC, and he believes he sees evidence all the way back to the Golden Age of Greece, which was about the 5th century BC. The current exercises that this curriculum is based on come from Aphthonius. Aphthonius lived sometime in the 4th or 5th century AD, spent some time in Antioch, and essentially put together this format for these exercises that were used throughout the culture to teach composition. So if you can picture it for a minute, all grammar and logic teachers to prepare for rhetoric used the progymnasmata, but the progymnasmata is a collection of exercises. And so depending upon the teacher, the way that he taught these exercises or the manner in which he taught it, the chronology of the exercises might differ. Some teachers might leave out some stages, others might add some stages. Aphthonius came along in the 4th or 5th century and essentially put together his model. Now, for about 100 years, Aphthonius had competition. There were other texts out there with the progymnasmata, but over that 100 years, the culture began to realize the efficacy, the genius, the success of Aphthonius's model, and by 100 years after his composition text came out, there was no more competition. Beginning in about 600 AD, Aphthonius's progymnasmata, hands down, was the curriculum that everybody used. The progymnasmata was originally, when Aphthonius wrote it, was originally done in Greek. The first Latin translation showed up in 1507, and then it was translated again in Latin in 1537. And it was the standard curriculum until around the 17th century. Both in Europe and in the colonies it was used. So at Harvard University, when Harvard University first began, the progymnasmata was its composition curriculum. Around 1630 to 1660, someplace in there, there was a call for a more scientific approach to teaching composition. By scientific, we could substitute the word logical. There was a call for more logic and less rhetoric. That's a whole different discussion, one that's quite interesting and one that we need to take to heart at some point. But at this point, a couple of fellows by the name of Doggart and Farnaby introduced a new manual, and the progymnasmata began to lose its influence. It was on the based on the work of Dugard and Fernality, modern composition theory came into being, and modern composition theory is essentially a reduced or a condensed version of the progymnosmata. So in current composition theory, which was how I was taught both in high school and in college, and many of you were taught from a cohesive modern theory. A lot of you younger folks didn't even have that. But when I was in school, the composition theory was based on four types of discourse: descriptive, narrative, argumentative, and expository. And it was developed through five modes: comparison, contrast, definition, exemplification, and finally cause and effect. If you look at the progymnosmata, you will see that these four types of writing with these five modes of development are a reduced version of what's in the exercises. This theory devolved from the progymnosmata, and it lacks in a number of ways. And although we could debate the strengths and weaknesses of modern composition theory, the most telling weakness is its lack of success. The curriculum is not producing good writers, plain and simple. Let me read to you another fable by Aesop. A fisherman, skilled in music, took his flute and his nets to the seashore. Standing on a projecting rock, he played several tunes in the hope that the fish, attracted by his melody, would of their own accord dance into his net, which he had placed below. At last, having long waited in vain, he laid aside his flute, and casting his net into the sea, made an excellent haul of fish. When he saw them leaping about in the net upon the rock, he said, "Oh, you most perverse creatures, when I piped, you would not dance, but now that I have ceased, you do so merrily." The fisherman represents modern Western culture. Through the use of faulty inductive logic, he abandons the historical precedence of fishing with nets in order to use a more pleasing method of flute playing. Unlike the fisherman, we have not yet tired of waiting in vain for success. We have still not returned to the proven methods of teaching composition, and we are starving as a result. The answer for the fisherman was to return to the proven method of catching fish with nets. The answer for Western culture is to return to the proven method of learning to write with the progymnosmata. I've said that we have not yet tired of waiting, but we are seeing some promising glimmers of change. Evidence of a return to classical methodology in composition is arising in a number of places. Two college-level textbooks, which you'll find in the bibliography that I handed out to you, have been published in just the last 2 or 3 years. They are based on the progymnosmata. In fact, I think that you'll see three textbooks on the bibliography. They're starred. One of them has been around for about 50 years. The two most recent, D'Angelo and Corbett's the old one. Yes, Crawley, came out, I think, 1999 and 2000, very recently. The website, Silva Rhetorica, from BYU. And if any of you ever wonder why the Mormons are so successful in evangelizing, the Mormons are also the most thorough in their study of rhetoric of any denomination out there as well. But the Silva website from BYU has an excellent and extensive discussion on the progymnosmata. Dr. Gideon Burton, who's responsible for this website, I've had the privilege to communicate with a number of times. He mentioned last summer that at a conference of international rhetoricians, there's a group of Swedish educators who were actually lobbying to bring the progymnasmata back into the Swedish public education system to teach composition as well, which I found fascinating. And I don't know how successful they've been to this point. The fact that a workshop like this can take place with such a large number of people here is also very encouraging, because it shows us that we are looking for ways to teach composition more effectively. I've been using this curriculum for 2 academic years and a summer school session, and I've taught in the classroom only the first 6 stages, because they are progressive and one needs to work through the stages as they develop. We're not all the way through the progymnasmata yet. We've only gotten through the first 6 stages. Whitfield, where I teach now, and which I came to Whitfield just last year, adopted this curriculum, and we've already seen dramatic improvement in the writing of a number of our students. We use it along with Shirley Grammar and the Writing Road to Reading in the grammar school, 4th through 6th grade, and then with Warners in the upper school. So we teach grammar along with composition. I find that the more I teach the progymnasmata, the better I understand its brilliance. And I am constantly amazed, week after week, month after month, how effective it is in teaching students how to write. If one does not think well and think rhetorically, not just logically, but rhetorically, then good writing is vastly more difficult and often a frustrating experience. By thinking rhetorically, again, I mean the ability to engage the imagination of the audience relative to the truth that one is teaching. And that's a difference from thinking logically. If we think of logic as the way we discover truth, then we need to think of rhetoric as the way we impart truth, the way we communicate truth. And both are necessary. As I said, the progymnasmata consists of 14 stages. Each stage of the progymnasmata, each stage trains the mind to think not just more clearly, but also rhetorically, as well as constantly practicing the effective use of words and sentences. The progymnasmata brings students to the point where they're able to effectively learn from master communicators through imitation. What I mean by that is the progymnasmata gets students to the point so that they, at the end of the logic years, they're able to fully appreciate in the rhetoric years the skills and devices that master communicators use. Because at the end of the logic years, they know how to write well. They're good writers at this point. Now they can begin to really hone and fine-tune their communication skills. The progymnasmata develops rhetorical structures in the mind. We use a different set of skills when we persuade the truth than when we discover truth. In the discovery of truth, we use the intellect and our tools of logic and right reasoning. In the persuasion to truth, we use not only the intellect and our tools of logic and right reasoning, but in addition, we must use the imagination and our tools of rhetoric and right communication. We must engage our audience's imagination in order to persuade. Persuading to truth is different than discovering truth. And therefore, we use the progymnasmata, the before exercises, beginning in the 4th grade, completing at the end of the 9th grade. Not having been trained to think rhetorically myself, I find myself using logical presentations and propositional truths and not being successful in persuading people to change the course of their lives and being befuddled by it. Why, it's so clear. Why don't you believe? because I'm not engaging the imagination. When I finally changed my diet 2 years ago, it wasn't the result of new propositional truth. I already knew the truth. I had known it for years, yet still I ate too much of the wrong kinds of food. I knew better. Then 2 years ago, in July of 2000, during the course of about a week, my imagination was engaged in three distinct ways, and I changed the course of my life. I changed my diet. Not because of new information, but because of the way my imagination was engaged. I changed the eating habits of 40 years as a result of my experiencing truth through that successful imagination, engagement of my imagination. When the rich young man came to Jesus to ask him what he had to do to inherit eternal life, he knew the answer. The propositional truth is that we serve God and God only. And the rich young man knew that. We know that as a result of his replies. He responded back to Jesus' questions with the truth. He believed that he was in obedience, but he was not. At this point, Jesus does not repeat propositional truth to serve God and God only, which the young man knew, but instead he told him a modified narrative. The young man himself becomes the main character, who must go and sell all his possessions, give the money away, and then come back to follow him. Jesus told the rich young man a true story, not propositional truth. By engaging the imagination of that young man, he persuaded him of the truth. The young man could no longer intellectually assent to that truth and mistakenly believe that he was in obedience. But, confronted with the power of that truth, the young man tragically rejects the truth. But at least he knows that he is not in obedience. Jesus engaged his imagination, which is what effective communication must do. The progymnosmata begins to develop rhetorical structures in the mind. In the initial fable stage, for example, by using Aesop, how many of you, by the way, let me ask this, how many of you have used either Matt Whitling's fables or the Excellence in Writing fables and imitated does. Okay, so many of you already know what we're talking about. In both the fable and the narrative stages, let's stay with the fable. We look at a single idea and we begin to learn how to use our words to so engage the imagination that the idea is believed by the audience. The fable of the dog and the meat is engaging the imagination to help us understand how easy it is to lose. We learn that words represent ideas, and we can communicate the same idea using various words and various sentence structures. In a similar way, we move on to the narrative stage, which again builds upon the skills that we've learned in the fable stage and adds to it. It helps us to think more imaginatively and yet more consciously as well. We become conscious of the six necessary elements of any good narrative: agent, action, cause, place, time, manner, the who, what, why, where, when questions. We learn how to identify these elements and use them in a narrative and how effective they are. As we move into the Kriya and the proverb stage, students begin to learn eight distinct ways to engage the imagination in order to persuade or clarify an idea. The eight ways of developing an idea are rhetorical structures being clarified and defined in the minds
of the students. Now let me give you an example of what I'm talking about here. In the current composition theory, it would be like a coach who is constantly having his team scrimmage and never doing any basic skill development. Okay? It would be like a coach telling a player to drive into the paint and score a basket. Okay? And telling the player to do that over and over again, and yet never teaching the student how to do a crossover dribble, how to lay the ball up, how to do a running jump shot or a jump stop. The progymnasmata takes this task and breaks it down into doable pieces that students can master. Okay. Talented students, gifted students, will always learn how to compose. The talented basketball player, if you tell that young boy or girl to drive into the middle and score a basket, the talented player will do that. There's just an innate gift. So the talented student will learn how to write. It's an innate gift. But for the rest of us, writing is an extremely frustrating experience because we're not given doable chunks to do under current methodologies. One of the most rewarding results for me is that my students' tears are gone. In the past, as a young grammar student, I can remember weeping in frustration with a writing assignment. Before using the progymnasmata, I witnessed my own children weeping in frustration over a writing assignment. Before using the progymnasmata, I have witnessed and heard from frustrated parents of any number of students over their child's frustration with writing assignments. Writing does not need to be frustrating, nor leave us with feelings of hopelessness and frustration. We just finished a 2-week summer school session where new incoming students were introduced to our composition curriculum. Those students varied in age from 11 to 15, and for 2 weeks they spent 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, writing, flat out writing for 3 hours a day. What's that? 30 hours. 30 hours of writing. No tears, no frustration. They thanked me at the end of 2 weeks for the experience that they had. Now, if you think about that, that is incredible. In the middle of summer, you would have 6 or 7 students sitting at a table, writing 3 hours a day and enjoying it. That is so alien to anything that I ever experienced growing up. Maybe even more important, I'm filled with wonder when I find my non-academic students are writing happily and well. By writing well, I mean that they are clearly and persuasively articulating ideas on paper. My non-academic students. According to Bonner, and we're on point D, by the way, on implementation, if you're following along in your outline. According to Bonner, the Romans began formal education, as I said, around the ages of 10 or 12. So beginning at that age, the students began to work in the progymnasmata. Those ages, of course, correspond to grades 4 through 6. At Whitfield, we have started with the 4th grade, as I said, and at this point, we will teach both the fable and the narrative to both the 4th graders and the 5th graders. In other words, we'll do fable and narrative in the 4th grade, and we'll do it again in the 5th grade. Okay. Part of that is to give the students a little bit of diversity in their writing, so they're not doing the same skills. And the other aspect of that is we want the repetition in those early years. Okay. The 6th grade, then, will begin the crea and maxim, and refutation and confirmation, and so on, roughly 2 or 3 stages per year, with review each year of the previous stages done until they finish in the 9th grade with thesis and the proposal, defense, or attack of a law. the implementation at Whitfield, while going well, is not a particularly simple task. With a great deal of ongoing thought, and still not entirely sure how our days will be impacted, we as a faculty from grades 4 through 9 have made a commitment to spend 30 to 45 minutes a day in composition. Now, some of you may be in schools where you're already at that or above, and I applaud that. I would like to spend an hour a day in composition. But given our modern subject matter that we have to teach, for us to do 30 to 45 minutes is a big challenge to the teachers. Now, if you think about that for a minute, one of our major responsibilities as educators is to teach students how to write. And yet here we are with dedicated Christian teachers who have gotten to the point where it's difficult for them to spend 30 minutes a day writing. Okay, that's because of that frustration level. And writing through a modern composition method that's based on logic and not rhetoric is such a difficult thing to accomplish for students. The trivium was initially developed in order to teach language, first Greek, then Latin. We continue to teach Shirley grammar and spelling in the grammar school as we teach the progymnasmata. In the logic years, we continue to teach grammar. We focus more on syntax, or the logic of grammar, as we complete the progymnasmata exercises. Syntax is taught for us primarily with Warner's and supplemented with lots and lots and lots of sentence diagramming. If I have a class that's weak in a particular area of grammar, I'll focus on that and we'll spend time on that weakness until it is mastered. These grades 4 through 9 correspond at Whitfield with the middle to the end of the grammar years and the logic years. With the 10th grade, we begin rhetoric, and the skills learned with the progymnasmata will allow us to effectively imitate the great communicators of the West. What comes before grade 4 in K through 3? Logically, in these K through 3 years, the task is to prepare students for the progymnasmata. That's done, again, with Shirley grammar, the writing road to reading, and lots of memorizing, recitation, and reading. Reading aloud, reading silently, having adults read to students. The larger the body of language available to the fourth grader as he enters into the progymnasmata, the more quickly and more thoroughly he will learn these basic skills of composition. Now, let me conclude my talk here by saying that there are numerous composition curricula available to choose from today. How do we decide which to choose? God has given man three ways to validate truth: revelation, historical precedents, and a combination of deductive and inductive logic. In regards to revelation, I've not yet found a scripture passage which has designated a specific composition curriculum to me. So I turn, first of all, to historical precedents. There is one curriculum currently available to us which has a proven track record of success stretching back over 2 millennia, 20 centuries of success. Nothing else is in the same ballpark. But what about logic? First, we should realize that it was faulty inductive logic, colored by the sin of prideful men, that moved Western culture away from the progymnasmata. This curriculum, as I mentioned, was actually used at Harvard University for its first 30 years. Such reasoning was faulty logic. I believe with careful study and with rigorous assessment, logic will align with historical precedents to declare that the progymnasmata is the best way to teach composition. Do we have just 5 more minutes? Do we have longer? Just 5 more minutes, right? Okay. This went longer than I actually wanted you all to do some writing. In fact, one of the handouts that I gave you was a Acrea, and I was going to have you write a Acrea on Aristotle's maxim that learning is the liveliest pleasure. And we may get started on that if you don't have any questions for me. Okay, so let me first of all stop, and we'll see if you have questions. If you don't have questions, we'll write. If you have enough questions, we won't write. Any questions? Comments or observations? We actually use that as one of our texts in our rhetoric class. Yes. But not in the Progymnasmata per se. It's interesting that the BYU fellow, Gideon Burton, he has his PhD in medieval literature and pedagogy. And one of the things that we've incorporated are 18 figures of description that he found in a number of sources that teach students how to communicate an idea in a number of different ways. Erasmus goes into actually figures of speech, which is an advanced stage that we'll get to. The Progymnasmata begins to give students an understanding of figures of speech by working on figures of description. Okay, two comments there. First of all, remember, we just implemented this at Whitfield this year. Okay, so we started everybody with the fable stage. And so in this new year that we're coming into, we've got these new students that are coming in that you're mentioning, and so we did a summer school. Okay, and in that summer school, we're giving these skills. Right now, it's two-week sessions, which we found adequate. As we get further into this and we get a ninth grader coming in who has to learn 12 of these stages, okay, he's going to have a lot of work to do that summer. But if something's worth doing, we need to do it. The alternative is to continue teaching composition in an ineffective manner. So that's a problem that we have and will face, but it's a problem that I welcome. No, we don't. What we have are these stages. Now, we have developed some lesson plans, and my intention is that within a week or two, we'll have those on our website, whitfield.org, for at least the fable and the narrative stages. And so anyone who's interested in beginning this could go there and download lesson plans. Okay, there's nothing sovereign about these lesson plans. Okay, they're just us looking at this material, looking at the Progymnasmata, and putting it into effect. Okay, in some ways it seems a daunting task, but in some ways it is so simple because it's so right. It just fits so well. And once again, even what Matt Whitling has done with his fables and narratives, and even what's in the excellence in writing as a way to start. But then we need to move on to the Crea and Maxim stage where we actually begin teaching students how to write essays. Okay, and those should be on the website. Again, some real lesson plans are available for people who would like to use those.
And where are you getting your information? And are you developing from this?
Yes. I found that the BYU website was absolutely fantastic. That's been my primary source of information. Well, no, I'm sorry. Athonius's Progymnasmata is the primary source. And that's on the website. You'll find it there. If you begin to work through that, you will be successful. It's a good, although very abbreviated, curriculum. But that's the initial source. And then the BYU website I found very helpful. But even those college textbooks can be helpful as well. You know, it's on the paper. It's Silver Rhetorica. That's the main website. Yes, sir.
The 14 stages, can you tell us
Yes, all the rest of those. Confirmation, refutation. Yeah, okay. I will. Remember now what my purpose was, though. I realize that this is a frustrating seminar because you really don't know what in the world I'm talking about. Okay? But let's go through the crea, and I'll show you with the crea, and hopefully then you could get an idea of some of the other stages. And I need to move away from the microphone. I think we're out of time anyway, so the tape's probably over, so that's fine.